From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And all this week, we are focusing our program on the drug known as fentanyl. Yesterday, we got an overview of the crisis from the journalist Sam Quiñones, who has spent 15 years documenting how opioids have destroyed families and communities across America. Tomorrow, we'll focus on the politics of fentanyl, including competing views on how best to prevent this incredible level of death. Thursday, we'll focus on different solutions people are trying, from what governments are doing with billions of dollars in opioid settlement money to attempts to reach people, one by one, in hospital emergency rooms. Finally, on Friday, we'll probe how best to talk to our young people about drugs, moving beyond the Just Say No campaigns many of us grew up with. But today, we're going to focus on addiction itself and how people enter treatment and recovery from these terrible diseases, where chemicals effectively hijack their free will. We'll also talk later in the program about the idea of harm reduction, acknowledging that people who are addicted to drugs will continue using, but at least keeping them from spreading diseases like HIV. Joining us now is Chelsea Spinello. She does what's called client relations outreach for Sunshine Behavioral Health, a national drug and alcohol rehab organization. Sunshine offers services at Lincoln Recovery Rehab Center in Raymond, Illinois. Chelsea, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Brian. I'm so glad to be here today.
We're also joined by Laura Garcia, Director of Substance Use Prevention and Recovery at the Illinois Department of Human Services. Laura, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here.
And listeners, all this week, you are invited to join our conversations at 800-222-9455. If you have a question about fentanyl or opiates, or maybe you have a personal story to share, 800-222-9455. And, you know, as I said yesterday, there's long been a stigma with drug use and overdose deaths in particular, which is one of the reasons the current crisis was able to grow so significantly without getting enough attention for a long time. That has been changing, so if you are willing to speak out, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Chelsea, I want to begin with you, and I'm especially glad you made time to be with us today. That's not only because you work helping people overcome their addictions, but you have your own experience with substance use, and I was hoping we could begin there. How does that part of your life story begin?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you allowing me to discuss it. And it's something that I kind of hid for a very long time. And, you know, everybody feels this shame in addiction. But really, you know, I've mentioned this to a lot of different people. Addiction isn't you. It's not like your true self. So my experience, I grew up with a mother that was kind of a closet addict. So what that means is she wasn't always, you know, showing it off, or it wasn't showing to other people. But I knew growing up, and I always told myself I would never fall into that. And unfortunately, I did. In 2019, I was a flight attendant for a really long time, and I loved my job. I decided to pick up another job and work as a bottle girl, working at a local bar. And I found myself partying every weekend, and then every weekend turned into every night and every day. And then as I was a flight attendant, I was trying to hide it. So I would, you know, not work and fly just so I could, you know, take care of my addiction. And my addiction actually started with cocaine and alcohol. And it's very fortunate. I always say, by the grace of God, I went to jail, and it completely showed me what I didn't want in my life. And that was the first time I ever got in trouble. So I told myself I no longer wanted to be a part of that circle of people. I no longer wanted to partake in those types of things. And luckily, I found this job working in recovery, and it set me up for success. And April of this year, my mother found herself back into addiction after a 5-year recovery journey, and she passed away from fentanyl, sadly. But I think having this position, it really set me up to handle it in a different way than others might. And I miss my mother terribly, but I think this is my life goal, is just helping people and understanding and giving support to those that don't have it, and just showing them that there's a different way in life. So that's me.
Thank you so much for sharing those stories. I'm so sorry about your mother. Can I ask you to go back? You mentioned that you said it was fortunate you went to jail. Can you say more about that and how that
Yeah,
turned
I
out?
always say by the grace of God, I went to jail because there were many times where I would like kind of joke around with people. I'm addicted. Ha ha ha. You know, like it's a funny thing because cocaine itself is like a party drug. Nobody really looks at that as like an addictive thing. They look at it, oh, well, you can stop that. But I found myself doing it every day, and I was doing things like selling my stuff or, you know, trying to come up with odd ways of making money to be able to handle that addiction. Or I'd go to the dealer and ask him, you know, ask him for the drug. And I woke up to a knock one door, or sorry, one day on my door, and it was a gentleman saying, "Hey, I bumped into your car downstairs. Do you mind coming down and exchanging your insurance information?" And I was just caught off guard. It was early in the morning. I had had a full night of partying, and I walked downstairs with him, and all of a sudden there were like 30 DEA members with guns in my face saying, "Miss Bonello, put your hands behind your back." And at that point, I still had no idea what was going on, but they had thought that I was a drug dealer. And in that moment, I was like, oh my God, my whole life has just flashed before my eyes. And I wasn't a drug dealer. I wasn't any of those things. But hanging around the people I was hanging around with and not knowing the extent of who they were and doing the things that I was doing, it put me in that position. And I think just having my eyes open to that and what my life could potentially be, it really changed my thought on who I wanted to be. And it set me up for success. It put me in a position to want to be a better person and help others and never do that again. Like I said, I'd never been in trouble until then. I didn't want it to happen again.
And you had mentioned your mother's long experience with addiction in life, sometimes coming, sometimes going, keeping it hidden. And you said it was fentanyl poisoning. I understand it was like an accidental. She didn't know what she was ingesting.
So my mother had she had been 5 years sober. She started her own business. It was actually a CBD business. She wanted to help people as well. And her addiction was previously opioids, so it was understandable. But she had just had a mommy makeover, which is a surgical procedure. And after she had it, she told me, she's like, "Chelsea, I really don't want to take these pills. And so I'm going to give them to one of my old friends." And I was like, "Mom, that's not a good idea. We don't want to invite those people back into our lives. If you want, I can take care of you while you're recovering." She was like, no, I don't even want to see them. Out of sight, out of mind." And so she gave them away to an old friend, which happened to be her old drug dealer. Unfortunately, a poor decision on her behalf. And a couple of days later, she was just like, "I feel terrible. I feel so awful, and I might need to go get my pills back." And my aunt and myself, we were both just like, "No, it's okay. Let's tell the doctor what happened. Let's just be honest and go get new ones." The night before that happened, she decided to go back to that woman that she got the pills from, and or took the pills to, and she happened to give her the wrong set of Percocets, and they were not Percocets, they were fentanyl. So in combination with all of the other medications my mother was on, she took one early morning the next day. She got McDonald's, and it unfortunately took her life. After that, we found her sleeping in her bed about 6 hours later, and we didn't get an autopsy back for about 4 months. And this whole time, we had no idea. I had no idea that my mother had, gone that route, but she unfortunately did. And we got the true story from the people around her. And so it's really sad. It's a terrible thing, but people don't really realize that fentanyl can be in just about anything these days. Something as simple as smoking a bowl of marijuana, it can be in that. And it's sad, but it can happen to anybody.
Well, thank you again so much for sharing those stories with us. And again, I'm very sorry about your mother.
Thank you.
Laura Garcia, I want to bring you into the conversation now. So Illinois has seen thousands of stories like Chelsea's and her family's. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of the opioid crisis here right now, and especially downstate where many of our listeners live?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to acknowledge and for say I'm so sorry for your loss, Chelsea, but also acknowledge this how brave it is for you to come and share your story with us, because behind every number that we share related to the overdose epidemic, there is a human being with a family, with friends, and the loss of a community member. So it's really important for us to understand this. Based on the Illinois Department of Public Health statewide in 2023, they posted their semiannual overdose report. And in 2022, there were over 3,000 fatalities due to opioid overdose in Illinois. The deaths involving any opioids increased by 8.2%, and the deaths involving synthetic opioids, fentanyl and fentanyl and analogs increased by 12.1%. I'd like to share with you that the Department of Public Health actually hosts a dashboard from tracking the overdose epidemics, the non-fatal overdose rates by county. You can access this dashboard by the idph.illinois.gov opioid data dashboard. And you could look at some of the data per county. For example, if we look at Stark County, we see that there are less than 10 cases, Peoria, Woodford, and so on. So I invite people to really visit this dashboard so they could see, based on their zip code, based on their county, how many people are being impacted and dying of the overdose epidemic. Brian.
Chelsea, I want to ask you about, you mentioned your mom's experience, but you work with a lot of clients as well who maybe, heroin is becoming more difficult to find. Pills that people think are, sort of legitimate pharmaceutical opioids. Maybe they're not using them legally, but they think they're a legitimate medicine. Do you have clients that you've encountered who also, how prevalent is fentanyl becoming?
To be completely honest, fentanyl is probably one of the vast majority of the cases that we see at our center at Lincoln Recovery. It's actually really scary, and there's plenty of people that come in there too that think that they're just doing heroin, or they're just doing, like the normal opioids like Percocets or just those types of things. But when we drug test them, which is something that we regularly do when somebody comes into our facility, it turns out to be fentanyl. So sometimes people don't even know that it is, and I think it's just because the fact of the cost to make it is much cheaper, and the cost to ship it here is much cheaper than it is to get other things these days. So yeah, the vast majority of the cases we see are fentanyl.
And that definitely tracks with the conversation we had yesterday with the journalist Sam Quinones. And if people want to hear more about why that is and the labs and how this came to dominate the market, they can listen back to that conversation. Laura, I want to turn now, and I should say we need to take a break in about 3 minutes. But before we do, let's get into the state's overdose action plan. What is Illinois doing to try and stem this incredible suffering that's out there, that as you mentioned in those numbers?
Absolutely. So the statewide overdose action plan is a plan that Governor Pritzker released, the second edition in 2022. The SOAP, which we call the SOAP forms the strategic framework for addressing the overdose crisis in Illinois. It does, con as we've seen, the opioid crisis continues to change over time, and we continue to put new initiatives in place to address these new challenges. The SOAP is the living document with the goal to reduce the number of overdose deaths in Illinois. And there are five priority categories. The first one is social equity, increasing access in communities disproportionately impacted by the overdose crisis and other social health issues. We know that many areas in the state, such as the counties downstate, do not have enough resources to address substance use disorder. So, looking at increasing that access. The second one is prevention, increasing public awareness campaigns. For example, your campaign this week about the impact of substance use in children, individuals, and families right now and in the lifespan. The third one is the treatment is expanding treatment and recovery support services, evidence-based practices for long-term support and care of people who are seeking recovery. The fourth one is harm reduction because as Chelsea mentioned and shared in her story, people cannot recover if they die from their addiction, right, from an overdose. So, giving people an opportunity to recover by bringing a harm reduction first approach in the continuums of care. And the fifth one is the priority for justice-involved populations and public safety. The first 2 weeks following the release of incarceration show that these individuals have a 12.7% higher likelihood of death than the general population, with overdose being the leading cause of death. So these are just a few initiatives under the five priority categories under the SOAP that the state is working on to stop the opioid crisis.
All right, we're going to take a break. We will continue this conversation when we return. I do want to mention before we go to the break, though, that if you know someone who is suffering from a substance use disorder, maybe you yourself are experiencing it, you can contact the Illinois Helpline for Opioids and Other Substances at 833-234-6343. That's 833-2-FIND-HELP. There's also a texting line and a website, helplineil.org. We will have all links to all of that on our website, 21stshow.org. And we will continue this conversation when we return after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our week-long series on fentanyl. Today, we are focusing on addiction and treatment. And a little later in the program, we'll be talking more about harm reduction. Our guests for the first part of our hour today are Laura Garcia, Director of Substance Use, Prevention, and Recovery at the Illinois Department of Human Services. Also, Chelsea Spinello, who does outreach for Sunshine Behavioral Health, which does treatment, among many other places, at the Lincoln Recovery Rehab Center, which is in Raymond, Illinois. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. So Chelsea, you mentioned, we were talking before the break, that fentanyl is really everywhere now. It's in so many drugs that people don't even, you know, they don't think it's fentanyl. It could be in marijuana, for example. What works in treatment for fentanyl? How is it different from what's been done in the past?
Well, thank you for asking about that. So currently we have different types of recovery programs at Lincoln Recovery, including all of our other centers. But a lot of people, once they start using fentanyl, they change the chemical balance in their body. So we do have to most times use a medically assisted detox. And that can include a number of different medications. Some people will be using Suboxone. Some people use methadone. A lot of providers don't prefer to use methadone these days, just because it can be somewhat addicting as well. So especially our facility, we use Suboxone. There's other things. There's shots that people can get to detox from these. And a lot of people think of recovery and going into detox as something that's going to be super uncomfortable and just a really bad time for them. And, you know, sometimes it is a little bit harder, but we do everything in our power, including a lot of my partners, to make sure that it's as comfortable as possible. We have the best clinical team to make sure that they have any sort of fluids or things to help them recover faster and without such pain. But that's kind of how things work. So we have a lot of different methods that we use. If one isn't working so much, then we can try another. And again, it is a medically assisted detox, and we do have a staff at all times to make sure that they are well taken care of and all their vitals are really well taken care of as well.
You know, I want to play a bit of tape from yesterday's program. I mentioned we spoke with the journalist Sam Quiñones, who has covered the opioid crisis for 15 years now. He's written two books on it. And he has argued that the way we have approached treatment in the past, which is waiting for people to be ready, is outdated. It really doesn't work given the incredible supply and potency of fentanyl and also meth that are available to people. He says, well, let's listen to what he had to say about this.
And that is the more compassionate approach. If you find ways of pulling people off the street, getting them a blessed break from these drugs, then you find ways, then at some point their brains begin to heal and they can begin the process of embracing readiness for treatment. But when they're on the street, that's simply not happening. That the idea that you have to be ready and for treatment, that's the rock bottom today is death.
So Chelsea, I want to ask you what you think of that. His argument, and it's nuanced and complicated, but a very short, inadequate summary, is that you need to compel people into treatment, maybe even using the threat of jail on them. And given what you said about your own experience, I wonder what you think of that argument.
You know, I can definitely completely agree. I think if you take the addict off the streets and you give them the opportunity and the support, like I said, I think that intel can get somebody to change their mind and be different. And like I said, addiction isn't necessarily the person that they used to be. There's a lot of people that have this stigma about people saying, oh, well, they're making a choice. Well, it's not necessarily so anymore. It's the chemical imbalance in somebody's brain and their body after using for so long. I think it's important to get people out of the situation because, like Sam said, rock bottom is death these days. And so if there's a way to do it, if you can be of support to a family member or friend, or just be there and tell them, let's get this done, at least trying and taking that first step is the only way to do it. You don't even have to think long term. You don't have to think about 30 days or 60 days or 90 days or getting through the year. You have to think about that very first step, and that's it. You walk through that door and that's all you need to do. That's the only way to get started and the only way to save your life.
Laura, I wonder if you have a perspective on that, because one of the things that Quinones again is saying is that people aren't going to walk through the door. The fentanyl is so prevalent. There's so much supply out there that it's not a choice people can freely, really will make the way they might have using different substances a decade ago, for example.
Oh, absolutely. We cannot treat the current complex substance use disorder, opiate use disorder, the way we treated it 3 years ago. I'd like to say that, first of all, we need to really address the stigma that accompanies the opiate use disorder. It is a medical condition that responds well to medication, and we need to be able to help people that are ready for recovery and those that are not ready for recovery. And not to say that they're not ready to recovery, that they don't have the resources to recover. The state of Illinois has invested heavily in being able to expand medication first services. So we know that the FDA has approved three medications that really help opiate use disorder. Those first few days for people to stop using any type of a narcotic are pretty painful. And people have in the past, been fearful of going through the withdrawal symptoms that that accompanying those first 2 weeks. Medications are now available to treat people. And we established the Medication Assisted Recovery Now project through the helpline, where people can call our helpline. And in partnership with the Department of Public Health and our community providers, they can receive immediate assistance over the phone to talk to a physician that can help them explore what medication might really help them address their disorder.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because you still hear of doctors, yes, who won't prescribe those medicines or don't want to work with people who have substance use disorders. What is the state doing to try and expand the availability of encouraging physicians to participate?
Yes, we have a team that's doing an exceptional job, and we have our medical director, Dr. Nicole Gastala, that offers technical assistance to physicians at no cost that are coming in contact with people who have an opiate use disorder, because it's important for physicians to, again, many people address substance use disorders the way we did 30 years ago. Research is showing that medications are best practices to treat people with opiate use disorder, and it should be an option. People should have options, multiple pathways to recover, not a single acute model of care that requires people to walk into a facility and ask for help. People are now able, through our helpline, to call, email, text, and say, I need help, and they will be connected within 48 hours to a physician, to case management team that can help them explore the resources they have within their own community.
And again, we will put information for those helplines on our website, but it is 1-833-2-FIND-HELP or helplineil.org. I want to thank you, Laura Garcia from the Illinois Department of Human Services and Chelsea Spinello with Sunshine Behavioral Health. Thank you both so much for being with us today, and Chelsea in particular for sharing your personal stories with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.